He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the 73rd hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you as always. Glad everyone is with us on this Monday. A lot we want to get into today. Make sure you head over to Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Search 73rd hole. You can find us on any of those social media platforms, and we'd be happy to interact with you. So check us out, 73rd hole on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. A lot to get into today, including this new match that we've got, Taylor. We've already known Tiger and Phil are going to team up with the GOAT of the NFL as well as Peyton Manning, and they're going to have a match coming up probably on Memorial Day weekend. We don't have a 100% date on that, but we do have a 100% date for a couple of the local heroes. Whenever you talk about Oklahoma State guys, with Ricky Fowler and Matthew Wolf, who, let's be honest, might be a little outgunned in their match coming up against Rory and DJ. That's going to be a fun one, though. And it's Seminole, so we'll all get to see Seminole in all of its glory on TV.
Boy, yeah, you're right about that. I know we had mentioned right before all this stuff started, they had the Seminole Member Pro or whatever the tournament
is. Yeah.
And we had all the hype about that. And we saw all the great players that are playing down there, Rory, Rose. So, you know, it's just such a coveted course. Everyone, even the best players in the world, want to get out there and give it a look.
Yeah, so, Rory's dad's actually a member down there.
Oh, that's not that – that's
well, yeah, when I was reading about this tournament earlier, I found out Rory's dad's a member
that's
down
right.
there.
So Rory will get in and have a few practice rounds is what you're saying.
Rory will have a few practice rounds. I also imagine – I don't know how they're going to do the social distancing, but somebody this morning said that Rory and DJ would probably get the locker room, and then Ricky and Wolf would have to put their shoes on in the parking lot.
Well, also, too, I know Ricky and Wolf also hit it far, but there might be some social distancing between the drives off the tee box.
Rory and DJ hit it miles. Wolf hits a long way when he hits driver, but how often does he actually hit driver?
Well, and too, you know, we were looking at it earlier, kind of just, you know, it's not a David versus the Goliath type of deal, but Rory's currently number one in the world. DJ's fifth in the world. Ricky, we've claimed in our last player profile, he dropped down to 27 now or whatever it is. And Wolf, he had a tour win last year, but doesn't have much record on his world golf ranking because he was an amateur for so long. He's, what was he, 110?
110 in the world.
So that is 137 combined total world ranking versus six?
versus six.
So that might qualify as David versus Goliath.
Then again, who knows? Everybody's had time off. It's golf. I mean, these are still the best players in the world we're talking about here. Ricky and Matt Wolf are still a couple of the best players in the world, but Rory and DJ obviously have much more decorated resumes than do Ricky and Matt Wolf.
Have they said the format, what it's going to be? Is it just going to be a best ball? Or is
so
it
that's a good question. So they haven't exactly laid it out. It's a two-man skins game, okay. But they haven't told us whether it's going to be like a 6-6-6, maybe. I think a 6-6-6 would be fun.
That would be awesome.
Let's scramble for six. Let's do six alternate shot and six best ball. I would guess that they're just going to do 18 holes of best ball because most people think inside the box and are boring. So I'm assuming that that's how they're going to do it. They are playing for charity. So if you're wondering, United Health Group has pledged $3 million in charity skins. The proceeds are going to go to... So McElroy and DJ are playing for the American Nurses Foundation. So all the skins and the money that they win will go to the American Nurses Foundation. And then Ricky and Matt Wolf are playing for the CDC Foundation. So all the skins they win will go to the CDC Foundation. And then Farmers Insurance, which is a big sponsor of Ricky's, has pledged an additional $1 million for a birdies and eagle pool. And that is going to benefit an organization called Off Their Plate, which aids COVID-19 healthcare workers. So this is all, it's all good. It's all for charity. And so the live coverage is going to have Mike Tirico is going to be on the live coverage from his home in Michigan. We're going to have Paul Azinger, Gary Koch, and Rich Lerner doing play-by-play from an off-site production facility. And then Jerry Foltz and Steve Sands will be on the course reporting. It'll be May the 17th, which is a Sunday, 2 to 6 p.m. Eastern. So 1 to 5 our time here in Oklahoma. It's going to be on NBC, Golf Channel, NBC Sports Network, and Sky Sports. And it's going to be streamed for free on PGA Tour Live, Golf Pass, and GolfChannel.com. So if you want to watch it, you can watch it.
You have a lot of options. And Cole, you've been in the media industry a lot longer than I have, obviously. So how do you feel like that, you know, with all these different people being in all these different places, how do you feel like that the connection and chemistry will be, you know, when all these people are different? And, you know, like you said, you know, sometimes you see things, better live in person than you do when you're just on a screen viewing it. You know, it's like you and me, you know, we can sit and watch it and telecast and see, you know, what we see from it, you know. So how do you feel like that those guys will be able to kind of react to that whenever that's something that those guys aren't used to by any stretch of the imagination?
Yeah, it's interesting because we saw something similar with the NFL draft where they were all pretty much at home and you've got multiple screens up and then you've got people, kind of waiting for their cues to talk. So that'll be the interesting thing. With golf, though, the guys who do golf commentary and stuff, most of them are not usually in the same room anyway. Usually they're having to toss from one guy to another or man, woman, Dottie Pepper, obviously, phenomenal job. They're having to toss from one commentator to another anyway, so I don't know that this is going to have that big of an impact. I think the only impact it might have is, you're not on the site. So I know a lot of these guys like to go out the day of, look at the course, look at the conditions, look at the hole locations, and that gives you that extra bit of added insight, and that's what we're going to have to lean on Jerry Foltz and Steve Sands for, because they're going to be the guys who are there on course reporting. So we're going to have to rely on them for course conditions, rough length, speed of the greens, any moisture on the course, anything like that, hole locations.
And down Seminole by the coastline, that wind can blow as well, too. So
absolutely. I mean, there
could
right
be
on
some,
the beach.
Yeah, exactly. So could be some very stiff wind, could be some cuff conditions, could be 75 and no wind. So that's kind of a nice factor I like to see here too, because we don't really know what we'll get from it. And Seminole being the course that it is, you know, are they going to kind of just keep it like it is for the members, or are they going to try to trick it up a little bit, you know, maybe lengthen that rough, narrowing the fairways, you know, get those greens rolling even faster than they usually do. It'll be interesting to see how they handle it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I wonder, because they're doing the birdie and eagles pool, so I doubt there's going to be too many tough pin positions.
Well, yeah, that'd be a real jackass thing to do, wouldn't it? Yeah,
for charity.
Yeah.
So
put the pin in the middle of the green, flattest spot you can. Let them play, 6,200 yard course. You know, let the birdies and eagles fly.
I'm assuming we're going to have a lot of birdies and eagles, not only because we've got some bombers who make a lot of birdie and eagles, but because it is for charity. So I assume, look, all the money's going to be given out one way or another. It's not like they're going to, it's not like farmers are going to be like, well, you didn't make enough eagles and birdies, we're just going to pocket that money. I'm sure the money's all going to go where it needs to go charity-wise, but I'm sure that they're going to be having a lot of eagles and birdies. And I think this thing will do really well in the ratings because people
absolutely
are craving live sports right now.
Yeah, it's like what we talked about with Kelsey Klein last week. How well the NFL draft did. Was it 55 million?
55 million viewers over 3 days.
Over 3 days. I mean, I obviously know they get a lot of viewers, but it's not anywhere close to that number. You know, it just shows that even people that weren't interested in even the sport or the concept of it, even the biggest NFL fans, won't watch the draft. But I think it'll also be good, and maybe even this, this quarantine and kind of setting up these little games. We got the Tiger and Phil match coming up, which should be around the end of May. I would love to see some things, can continue to go like this, even once everything starts back up. I remember, we've talked about before how many, all the old legends used to play, at Shell's Wonderful World of Golf, where it was just a head-to-head match at some of the best courses in the world. There's some where they play at Pine Valley, Cypress Point, some of these courses that either don't want to host a big tour event or don't have the room for it, for the capacity of the crowds and the, just the thousands of people that'll go out there. So I think maybe getting something like that set up to where we can see, some of these other great golf courses around the world that don't get the limelight just because you don't see them on a yearly basis, like Augusta or, some of either the British Open or US Open courses around. Or I even remember growing up, there was a couple times there was like a night golf type thing where it was like Tiger and I think it was Tiger and Hank Keeney, the throwback name there, if anyone remembers that. And I think
I remember David Duval on one of those.
He may have been, yeah. They had a couple of different ones.
Yeah, I think I remember one with Duval.
And they were always on the weekday. They played out in California. So for us, it was West Coast. And, we got to see it later in the evening.
Yeah,
that
was awesome.
The last, five or six holes, they would literally bring lights out, parked cars, had the stadium lights out there. They had the stadium lights out there for Tiger and Phil when they were in the extra holes, because it was a 100-yard hole and they kept going for five or six times, so they needed that. But in this other thing, it was kind of more of a planned deal. And I really hope that we get to see things like that. I think it'd be cool to, just maybe when two players have an off week, on like a Monday or Tuesday, to see like a, you know, like we mentioned, like a, these people at Medalist, you know, who are playing, you know, maybe a,
right.
like a Wolf, I don't know, Wolf Hovland match, you know, just in the morning, you know, or just some friends play, you know, or like some of Phil's Tuesday money games that they talk about.
Yeah, people
you know?
Would watch.
You know, exactly. Yeah, people would watch. You know, get them interested, you know, and so hopefully we'll see some good things come out of this bad hiatus that we've been in.
Yeah, how cool would it be to see a couple of tour pros or even like four of them in a match like this go out to Cypress Point or Pine Valley or somewhere where we don't have tour events and get some cameras out there.
That's, yeah,
and
exactly.
watch these guys play one of those. It would be incredible.
Well, and what the Shells Wonderful World of Golf did, what I always liked was they would always, because sometimes they would go to great courses in different countries, you know, like when we were talking about our Pete Dye courses, they had one down out Casa de Campo down in Dominican Republic. So not only whenever they have the show, you know, they'll, and they were always pre-recorded. So it was kind of like, you know, an hour or 2 hours, and they would show most of the shots with a little bit of highlights, but they'd also cut in, you know, talk about the course, talk about the culture of wherever it is, you know, if they were, you know, like I mentioned, Dominican Republic, they'll spend 5 or 10 minutes on, you know, just going over the culture and the country and kind of, you know, how everything got started there and how golf had developed around there. And it's really just fascinating to see, you know, just how golf is related, not only just around here, but around the world too, and how some of the other countries value some of the great players in the game that we have.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's Taylor Williams. I'm Colby Powell. This is the 73rd hole. Glad everyone is with us on this Monday. We've got a lot we want to get into today. Tomorrow, we're actually going to head down to Chickasha, to our old stomping grounds, head out to Bushwood, play a little golf. Looking forward to that tomorrow. Always a joy going back home and checking out the 9-hole down there. Under new ownership, phenomenal greens. They're in great shape. Little rain comes down on the course. It's going to be in perfect shape for the Ouachita Valley big tournament this summer. So, yeah, looking forward to going down, knocking it around a bit tomorrow. Bushwood kind of eats my lunch sometimes, so I'm going to have to play a little bit. It was all right last time we were down there.
Well, and just, you know, you mentioned new ownership. Max Stewart, he was a big, really good friend of mine growing up. He was a little bit older than me in high school, so we never played on the same team. But just, we're on getting close to the two-year mark since he's taken over, and the way that the course was and the way that golf was around the city of Chickasha where I grew up, you know, when I was growing up, it was almost booming. You know, every course was packed every weekend, you know, and it had died down over the last few years, you know, and Max has helped rejuvenate that in the area, not just in Chickasha, but in Grady County and South Oklahoma area as well, you know. And for anyone who'd go back and look 2 years ago where the course was to where it is now, you would be beyond astonished. And if he keeps going at this rate, it's going to be immaculate.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking forward to going down there and playing some golf tomorrow. So one thing we kind of wanted to get into today, you know, we looked at this, and you've spent a lot more time on this than I have, is this golf synopsis that you found. And I want to give credit to the guy who put this together. His name is Richie Hunt, progolfsynopsis@yahoo.com. That's his email if you're ever interested in getting into any of this type of stuff. But what he did was essentially a deep dive. This thing is 354 pages. He broke down all the data that you don't even know exists about how professional golfers play the game, about their strategy, about what they do to lower their scores. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in here. So, Taylor, what are kind of a couple of the things that you took right off the top or some big key points that you took away from this that you learned something that maybe you can implement in your golf game, or even obviously you're a plus handicap, even the average weekend, you know, 14, 15 handicap guy can implement into their golf game to just gradually improve over time? What were some things you saw in this?
Yeah, I mean, it really is just tremendous content. It's hard to find anything much better than this. Like you said, Richie Hunt, he's been a guy who, anyone who goes to golfworks.com, he writes a few articles on there every year and has just been in the golf analytics side for over the past maybe close to a decade now. And every single year he'll come out with this pro golf synopsis. I try to get it every year. I always go to just his Twitter page, and there's a link in his bio, always the easiest way for me to do it. What'll happen is, I mean, I think it's $10 or $11, something like that. It's some of the best money you'll ever spend. You know, I can't go out and get a burger and fries for less than that anymore, you know, and so I definitely use this a lot more than that. And so there's a lot of different things you can get from something like this. You know, for example, if you're someone who just loves the game and loves like what the pros do and things like that, he literally goes through and breaks down every single player that was on tour last year, their stats, where they ranked. He has some of his own customizable stats. stats where, you know, he'll have like adjusted GIR average, you know, depending on how tough the course is, because hitting a green at,
Pebble.
At Pebble, maybe harder than at, you know, like John Deere or TBC, Scott, you know, any of these.
Those greens at Pebble are small. Man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, they're the size of a dime, yes. You know, and you got to be precise and also, too, the tougher conditions, how long you have. And, you know, so there's literally just breaking down so many different aspects of the game for those pros. So if you want to see kind of what the pros are doing, it's really good. I mean, for like what we talk about for our fantasy sports, you know, because that way, you know, for us who've been around it for a while, we kind of know, you know, what game can translate to other courses, you know, kind of what has worked in the past. And, you know, this is a good tool to look at and say, oh, well, this guy, you know, even you go to pjtourstats.com, and this is also just extra resource, you know, well, this guy's doing this really good right now, or it had done this good in the past, then, you know, he might have be able to transcend that success onto this week. So, you know, if anything you want to know about a tour player, one of your favorite tour players out there and how their game did last year, and he'll also break down a few things that they need to improve on and things that you know, metrics wise that look good for them. So that's a really cool thing. A lot of the stuff in here really though is for, I think, personal benefit, you know, and how you take it. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, that I've talked to about some of this stuff, you know, they're like, oh, you know, you know, that's just too analytical. You know, that's DeChambeau stuff. You know, it's like you're looking too much into it. And you know, you look at all these other sports. I mean, I think we were talking about back when the NFL was going on. Don't the Ravens have like an analytics coach in there?
Absolutely, they do.
And it's like if they're on 4th and 2 or 4th and 3 and the yard line, they got the guy up there calculating the percentages on if they should go for it or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, I mean, he's on the headset and Harbaugh asks him, you know, are we going here or are we kicking?
And we know they're not the only team doing that.
No, right? They're not the only team doing it. They were kind of the pioneers of hiring. I don't even know who it was. They hired like some whiz kid, young kid, maybe upper 20s, low 30s. They hired this whiz kid to basically be their analytics guru. And we need to know what is our percentage chance to win the game, to lose the game, if we kick it, if we go for it. And basically you can use kind of some of the same stuff in your golf game. And one thing that he talks about here that I think is pretty interesting is one thing that you get to, he gets to the statistical truths in golf. And the first one that he has on here is the wedge game is an extremely overrated part of the game. And it's interesting what he gets into. It's he basically says, look, you're going to have more shots from 150 to 225 than you're going to have 90-yard wedges. So your 90-yard wedges are important, but, you know, your 90-yard wedges, if you're a single-digit handicap, if you're around the 10-15, your 90-yard wedges aren't going to have too much variance in where you hit them. But from 190, your variance as an 8 handicap is pretty big. I mean, you can hit a good one, or you can push that thing 40 yards right into the water, and your variance from 190 is going to be big time. So he kind of gets into a lot of that, which I found fascinating.
Yeah, and you mentioned the variance there too. I mean, you know, if you're 200 yards out, you know, and you have a 4 or 5 iron in your hand, you know, you have a lot better chance of, you know, pushing it or hooking it left, you know, into a bunker or water, whatever it may be, than you do from 100 yards with a pitching wedge. I mean, I think that's the same for almost anyone at any skill level. You know, that's not just a good player, bad player type thing. So yes, that's definitely true. But, and we kind of reiterated this last week on our show, where it's like, you know, numbers never lie, but they don't always tell the truth, you know? And so, you know, I went through whenever I first read that, because I thought the same thing, you know, where it's like, you know, the wedge game is overrated. And in that aspect, he's 100% right on those two things. One, you know, you don't have as many wedges as you think you do. For someone who plays around here, if you're a good player and you're always playing up tees with your buddies in your money game, you may have a few more 100-yard shots than like the tour players do, right? Obviously, you know, but at the same time,
when you're playing real golf courses tipped out.
Yes, yeah. With good conditions at a standard length like it should be.
Or if you're a 15 handicap, you probably don't have a lot of wedges because you're not hitting it far enough to have a lot of wedges.
Or if you do, it's on your 4th or 5th shot, and then you need to be working on the things before then, you know, to get that right. And the reason that I had kind of steered away from that concept is that whenever you look at the analytics, like the best wedge players on tour normally aren't, you know, Rory and, you know, these other guys aren't known for their wedge game. You know, DJ was known with the TrackMan for getting his wedge game dialed in and all that. But most of the guys that are in the top, how many ever in the world, are bombers, and the wedge guys are more towards the middle of the pack or lower because that's what's keeping them afloat.
Right. You know? Rory has been notoriously bad at distance control on his wedges, at controlling his spin and all those things, to the point where you're looking at Rory and you're thinking, God, the way this guy drives the ball, if he could get a 90-yard shot within 20 feet of the hole, this dude would win every single week. I found this interesting, too. He talks about the fallacy that we all have from watching golf on TV. Because what do you see on TV? You see the very best shots, and you see all the putts that go in the hole. That's what you see. Now, on Sundays, you might see some other things late. But for the most part, throughout the week, you see the best shots, and you see the putts that go in the hole. So the average proximity of shots from 75 to 100 yards on tour is about 17 feet. Mm-hmm. Now, usually, if we're watching one of those on TV, if they're showing a guy from 92 yards on TV, he's probably hitting it to 4 feet.
And we went over this last week. So, what you know what the make percentage from 17 feet is?
17 feet, probably 20%.
19%. So, based on that average, right, from it was 75 to 100, right? Was that the yardage?
Yeah, 75 to 100.
So, based on that, the tour average, they will get up and down 19% of the time.
19% of the time.
One out of five, right?
Which, if you, and the fallacy is everybody thinks, well, you get these tour players with a wedge in their hands. These guys are getting up and down just about every time, more often than not anyway. And that's not, in reality, they're getting up and down about one out of five times from 75 to 100 yards, which when you think about it like that, it's like, man, when I'm watching TV, I have to realize it's like whatever.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, from 100 yards, from the fairway, and this is from the fairway. This isn't even from the rough. From the fairway is 2.8. So that means 80% of the time they're going to make a three from there, and 20% of the time they're going to make a two.
Yeah, essentially. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's what it means. It's like, and I compare it to, you know, if you watch the World Series of Poker, what do? They show you all the good hands where there's a lot of money in the action. What they don't, and then you go to the casino, and then you're like, you feel like you should be playing every other hand. What they don't show you is the three straight hours where that guy folded every hand he looked at before he got the one that he thought was right to play.
And for someone like you and me who are pretty numbers guys, you know, you like whenever you see that the guy's holding whatever and he needs to catch something on the river and he has like two outs in the deck or whatever, and so he has whatever percent chance, low five, you know, 5 to 10%, whatever that, even that. And all of a sudden he hits it and it's like, oh man, you know, he did the right thing because he stayed in it. You know, he stayed in and won the hand. And it's like, yeah, you'll have outliers once in a while. You know, it's like last week when you were talking about your story at Golf Club of Edmond, you know, where you're playing the 15th hole there and you hit it up to the right side of the green, which was, you weren't trying to hit it there, right. But you're way above the hole.
It was a bad shot.
Yeah, you had no chance to keep it on the green.
No, I it was a green in regulation, three putt double.
Because
I couldn't keep the first. I literally could not keep the first putt on the green.
The only way that putt would have stayed on the green is with the new rules and the corona thing and everything, the flag stick would have been in. So there might have been a chance that you just ram it right into the flag, it hops up, and it hops in the hole. It could have happened.
Yeah, I was aiming for the flag stick because I knew that'd be the only way to stop it.
So let me pose this question to you. If you made a three there, if that putt did go in, would you tell yourself here going out, oh, I made that putt before, I'm going to hit it there every time the pin's there because I did it once, so I'm going to do it again?
No.
That's not how it works. It's about the number of times that you put yourself in the situation to do it. And for someone like me, you know, I read into that and I thought, you know, about the wedge thing, you know, I was like, you know, I need to work more on my long game because I'll have more shots like that. And that is true, you will. But the reason that I think the wedge game is a little bit more important than he mentioned is, you know, we kind of broke this down a little bit. And the main reason that we're doing a show like this is because we got such great feedback from the end of our show with Kelsey and the show. Just how many people love the analytics and the stuff and the breakdown that we were having. So we
just talking about golf, how you play golf, how everyone plays golf.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't think about stuff like this, you know, or they're just, you know, they're just so used to a routine. So, I mean, you know, we're talking about that wedge game. The average shot is 17 feet there, right? So that's one out of five. All of a sudden, let's say you hit it up to, you improve that to 10 feet. Obviously, that's not your average, but instead from 17 feet, you hit it to 10 feet. A 10-footer standard putt is a 38% chance, so almost. And so you just went from that. So you're
making it twice as often.
You made it twice as often by hitting it 7 feet closer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, and then, you know, like we talked about also, too, for anyone who didn't listen, the average, the distance to where a tour player breaks even from where they'll have the exact same chance to one putt as they do three putt is about 32 to 34 feet, somewhere around there. And so, you know, if you're at 17 feet average from there and all of a sudden you hit a little bit worse shot, now all of a sudden you're 30 feet. And these are tour players putting as well. You know, most
people. Yeah, I would guess for a 10 handicap, what would that number be? 24 feet maybe? You're as likely to one putt as three putt?
For greens that they don't play often, yes, I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because what will happen is that we can break down even more of these numbers. What the tour players are doing is they're lagging that 35, 40, 45 footer up there to 2 feet that they're going to make 99% of the time, or 3 feet that they're going to make 95% of the time. And the 5-10 handicap, whatever it may be, is lagging it to 5 feet yep. that they're going to make, that a tour player would make 3 out of 4 times. And we know the handicap, higher handicap will not make it as much as even those guys do.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, you know, this, it just goes into, you know, so many little integral parts, and just every single step that you can get closer to the hole is important. So while the wedge game, I agree with everything he said, where you will not have as many wedge shots as you think, unless, like we mentioned earlier, playing tees a little too close, and you should. But I do think that the better that you can get with those wedges, as we just saw, every single foot that you hit it closer, especially once you get inside 10 feet. I mean, a 10-footer tour player makes 38% of the time. A 5-footer, like we just said, 75% of the time. Literally doubled your chances right there, you know. So, I mean, it's While there is a lot more things that you can focus on, we'll go into this a little bit later about how I think driving in the first shot is the most important by far. But the better that you can get at those shots, the lower your scores get, especially for those guys, like you mentioned, the 5 or 10 handicaps who probably are already struggling a little bit in those areas. But at the same time, too, you know, those guys, they'll be, you know, they might be punching out of trees more often than, you know, than the traditional tour player, or they, you know, may hit it, you know, in a bunker and not be able to hit a shot out of the bunker that a player can. So then they're forced to lay up. So I think there's some other areas in there that, you know, players can work on. And I mean, it's just like everything, you know, it sounds simple, you know, it's, you know, you talk about a business, right? You know, you say a business, the goal is to make money in a business. And your goal is to make more money than you spend in expenses in a business. And in golf, it's, you're supposed to shoot a lower score, you know, shoot the lowest score possible. But there's a lot of integral parts in that, you know. So for a business, how do you save money? Well, you cut costs here, you know, you hire cheaper employees, you know, you hire better employees who do more money. So there's a lot more things that go into it than just making more money than you spent. And it's the same thing with golf. You know, your goal is to shoot the lowest score possible, but there's a lot more things that go into it, because you're not just playing one round of golf. You know, you're playing how many ever rounds over the course of your life. And the more odds and opportunities that you can get yourself into those positions, the better off that you'll be.
Yeah, absolutely. That's Taylor Williams. I'm Colby Powell. We're going to take a quick break. A lot more we want to get into. I want to talk about distance next. I want to talk about distance off the tee and how much it matters in the long term, because I don't think it's necessarily going to surprise anyone, but whenever you actually look at the numbers as to how important it is to be able to move it off the tee, it's pretty shocking. So I'm Colby Powell, Taylor Williams. Take 2 minutes, rate and subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening. Follow us on social media. Look for the 73rd Hole on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back. Stay with us here on the 73rd Hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back. Rolling along here on the 73rd hole. Glad everyone is with us on this Monday. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you. Looking forward to golf getting back going, which PGA Tour events don't start until June 11th. But we've really only got one more week without live golf that we can watch. And then we're going to have, granted, it's just a little one day, but we're going to have DJ and Rory against Ricky and Matt Wolf, and then we'll have Tiger and Phil likely the following weekend, and then we'll only have another couple weeks to kill, and we'll be at Colonial for the Charles Schwab Challenge. So it looks like these tournaments are going to go on. It's places are starting to reopen, and it looks like we're going to have some golf in the near future. So looking forward to getting back to watching golf, as I have missed it greatly, greatly, greatly. Now, one thing, Taylor, I said I wanted to talk about was distance. Distance at all levels is important in the game of golf. We know this, but he really breaks down here how important it is. Dogleg par fours. If you're a bomber, you cut the corner. So for example, look at a dogleg par four. You're doglegging left, and you got two types of player. you got the player who has to take it out to the right of the dog leg because he can't go over the top of the trees and cut it off. And then you got the guy who can cut it off. So the guy who can cut the corner may only hit it 30 yards further than the guy who can't. But because he's able to cut the corner, he now has an approach shot that's being played from 70 yards closer to the green because he was able to cut the corner, and the angle that he took, the line that he took, gave him an approach shot that's 70 yards closer now as opposed to taking it out wide and having to play around the dog leg. So that's just one area where distance is so key. Also, one thing he gets into here, obviously the longest hitters on tour, typically the best players on the par fives. I would guess it's the same at your home track, at your Muni. The longest hitters are going to play the par fives the best.
Yeah, generally, yeah. We brought up Zach Johnson how many times on the show. You know, normally you're not going to be seeing everyone lay up. And then, I mean, obviously, you know, everything here, there are outliers at times, you know. So there are some holes where it is better to lay up on because the fairway's wider and it gets narrow up there. So this isn't 100% of the time type scenario. But most of the time, you know, and you also notice this too, a lot of the tour players, you'll see the bombers, you know, you look at their launch angle, and their launch angle may not be launching as high. So you may say, oh, well, you know, they're just hitting this medium flat ball. Well, their launch angle is low because they have so much club head speed that the ball rises. So they'll have really high apex heights, which is really important for when you're cutting dog legs, when you're trying to hit over trees.
Most of the time, if you're cutting a dog leg, there's trees.
Yes, yes.
There's trees, houses. Sometimes, I play at the greens up here water. In Oklahoma City. A lot of houses, water, things that you got to get the ball up and over.
Yes, yeah, and you know, even bunkers on some of the courses, you know, and that's, you know, we were kind of wanting to go into that as well, talking about carry distance. We'll get into that a little bit. One of the things he also mentions in here that is really important, I think a lot of people should take notice of, you know, there's a lot of people talk about total driving as a stat on the tour, you know, and essentially what they'll do is they'll combine, you know, where do you rank in driving accuracy and driving distance, you know. So if you're, you know, high up there in driving distance and middle of the pack average, you know, then you'll be a pretty good total driver, vice versa. Well, the couple of differences there is, one, you can measure your there's a finite amount of fairways that you can hit. Like, you can only hit so many fairways around, right? You play a par set, you know, you play a course with four par threes, you can only hit 14 fairways around, right?
Yes, and you're not going to, but you could, theoretically.
Yeah. No, besides your physical limitations, is there any cap of in how far you can hit the ball?
No.
So essentially, the point being is that, you know, you're measuring something on a percentage in fairways, you know, so you're hitting so many of them. Distance isn't a percentage. Distance is an overall number. So, you know, like, someone could hit a 5-iron off of the tee box. That's one of the analogies he makes in this. You know, you could hit a 5-iron off the tee box every time, lead the tour in driving accuracy, and you would rank somewhere in the middle of total driving because you're so high in accuracy, but you're so low in distance, but you'd still rank in the middle. But if you looked at, like, the strokes gain metrics, you would be DFL by how I couldn't tell you how many ever points because you're having such long approach shots into the green, you know? And so, you know, that's kind of where, like we mentioned earlier, numbers never lie, but they don't always tell the full truth kind of thing, you know? And,
exactly.
And so that's just kind of something to point out there. And, you know, we talk about wanting to know your carry distance. Carry distance is very, very, I cannot emphasize how important carry distance is to know. A lot of reasons is, you know, we've mentioned this last week for anyone who didn't listen, going on whenever you look at Google Earth stuff, you know, knowing how far it is to that bunker, how far it is to carry the right edge of the bunker, left edge of the bunker, middle of the bunker, you know, and how far, you know, if, like I say, if you have to carry those yardages, then you need to know, you know, how, if that is an approach. So, for example, if you hit your driver 280 and that's all you know, right? And all of a sudden you see, even if you use Google Earth and you see you have a bunker that to carry that's 265, you know. And so you're probably going to think, oh, well, I hit my driver 280, so I can carry that bunker 265. Well, what if your carry distance is 255 and 25 of your yards is from roll and you don't necessarily realize, or 30 yards of your roll is, or 30 yards of your distance is from roll and you don't, you know, you don't process that, you know, so all of a sudden, you know, then you're thinking, then you don't hit the right shot that you need to because you don't have all the numbers in front of you. And another,
yeah, I find that whenever I play with guys, you know, I'm a good player, not a great player. I'm a 5 handicap, but I try to take course management pretty seriously and know, okay, this club can or can't carry that far, and try to make the right decisions. I play with a lot of guys who are 10-12 handicaps. And what I find is a lot of the guys who are 10-12 handicaps, that they look at a situation, like if you're on a par 3 and you've got 168 to the pin, but you've got 157 to clear the bunker, then you know you got a guy who hits his 7-iron, let's say 162, and that's how far he knows his 7-iron goes. Well, what he's really doing is he's carrying it 155, and it's running out another 6-7 yards. So he thinks, okay, well, I hit my 7-iron 162, so that 157 to carry that bunker shouldn't be a problem. And then he hits it in the bunker. Knowing your carry distance is so crucial, because your carry distance and your total distance are not the same thing. And half the battle in golf, no matter where you're playing at, you got to carry the trouble.
And you
got have to carry the trouble.
Carry the trouble and making the right decisions. You know, like we mentioned how bunker's shaped right there. So just like you said, you know, if he's attacking a left pin and the bunker's diagonal with the green, he aims at the pin and there's, you know, 160 or whatever. If he knows his carry distance, he knows that bunker runs diagonally. Well, I can aim a few more feet to the right, give myself a little bit more leeway. So if I do either mishit it, or even if I do catch it solid, I'm not putting a lot more risk at me because I just aimed a few further feet right of the flag. And that's literally how small of a difference this game can make. I mean, you know, all of a sudden this player you're mentioning, or whoever it may be, uses this exact same scenario, right? You aim few further feet right of the flag because you know your carry distance is shorter. All of a sudden, hit it on the green, rolls up 15 feet. To average around 20%, you'll make that 1 out of 5 times. Let's say the opposite happens. You aim a little bit more at the flag where the bunker cuts in, land in the bunker, may plug, may roll down. Nevertheless, you're hitting a bunker shot that's short-sighted, that you're probably going to get up and down, maybe if you're a really good bunker player every other time. But, I mean, even then, you're probably not, you know, for a 10 or 12 handicap, you know, it's not going to.
A 10 or 12 handicap's getting that bunker shot up and down 1 out of 10 times. Realistically, yeah. 10 handicaps very rarely get up and down from the bunker.
Yeah, and even then, what are... For someone who's at that level, you could chunk it in the bunker again, could leave it in the bunker. You know, you can blade it over the green.
I would really be willing to wager that a 10 handicap would make 5 almost as often as he'd make 3 when he puts it in the bunker off the tee on a par 3.
As opposed to aiming 5 feet or a few feet further right to have a chance at, you know, even a 10 and 12, you know, they're not going to 3-putt from 20 feet that all. It's not an extremely common thing, you know. No. So
10% of the time.
So all of a sudden you're limiting yourself to almost the worst score you can make is a 3 if you're not just a complete idiot. And then all of a sudden now you are fighting and you have to do everything in your power to make it 3 because, you know, even when we look at the numbers, you know, for a 10 handicap, a good bunker shot maybe 10 feet, you know, and then there – a tour player is less than 50% to make that putt, you know? So what's a 10 handicapper going to do, you know? So many strokes can be saved from just a small decision on the tee box. Just knowing that, you know?
Exactly. And being better off the tee gets into something that I knew you wanted to get into, which was proximity to the hole, because obviously we talked about this some last week and a little bit more today. Every foot closer that you get to the hole gives you a better chance to make it, and your proximity is going to be better from the fairway than it is from the rough. But even going a step further, you know, talking about laying up or not laying up on par 5, sometimes if you go for it and then you leave yourself a 45-yard bunker shot, you're probably not going to get the 45-yard bunker shot as close as you are the 75-yard wedge from the fairway. So it's all about knowing where the trouble is at your course that you're playing, and that's where Google Earth can come in handy. I'll probably get on Google Earth and check out Bushwood before we go play Bushwood tomorrow. It's a course I've played 200 times, but I've never gotten on and seen what all the numbers were and all the carry yardages and things of that nature. So I think that'll be good to look at. But putting yourself in a position to get the ball closer to the hole, because if you can lower your proximity, you're going to lower your score. That's just what the numbers tell us.
Yeah, it's all about like we mentioned, getting yourself the best opportunities. And I'll kind of blend both of these in what we were just talking about, carry distance and proximity to the hole, all into one equation here. So I'll break down a course that a lot of us around this area probably played. Jimmy, also know you course. You know, like I said, I played there how many ever times. I know a lot of our guests have come on. We've mentioned it a few times. And the par fives there are interesting, especially if you play them all the way back, because they can be rather long. And a couple of the par fives out there. So for anyone who's played over the last few years, number 8 that's been renovated. So what it'll do is there's a strip of bunkers that's probably, 190 yards out in front of the fairway. And then on 13, which is a par 5 back into the wind, another little strip of bunkers sticks out about 60 yards away from the fairway. So, you know, let's say you're playing these holes, right, for your carry distance, and you're in the middle of the fairway and you have a 3-wood. And either one of these holes, I mean, you can be, you hit your 3-wood 250, and then you have 230 to carry these bunkers or whatever it may be, you know, or even it might be 260 to those bunkers. And so if you hit a good shot, you get in them. Or, you know, if you don't know your carry distance, then you don't know if that 230 is enough to even carry those bunkers. So there's a lot of, and that's where Google Earth also comes in, where you can see how narrow it gets up there. You know, what are the benefits of being back as opposed to being past them? And so, you know, if you're trying to hit it 260, just a little short of the green, you have to carry the 230 bunkers. If you hit low burning three woods, you're going to hit it in those bunkers. All of a sudden you have a 60-yard bunker shot, as opposed to even if you just would have hit a 2-iron and laid back into the fairway, or even at that point, even the roughs, you're at a better chance of hitting it than a 60-yard bunker shot, you know? So I think par 5 strategy is really important. If there's not much trouble around, obviously you want to get as close to the hole as you can. Those are the instances that we mentioned where I think it would be bad if you're going to leave yourself in a position to have a long bunker shot. Long bunker shots, even for tour players, are really tough.
Long bunker shots are just hard. There's no exact science as to how far behind the ball you should hit, as to what club you should use, as to how far you should kick. It's just, there's a lot of guesswork that goes into a long bunker shot.
Yeah, you have to hit it just right. Like I said, I've heard you can use your 60, you can use all the way up to 8-iron, open it, you know, hit it up. How far is it going to roll? So many question marks as opposed to just being in the fairway. And also, too, about going for a par 5s, you know, you don't want to leave yourself short-sighted, having to flop it over a bunker, water on the other side of the green. You know, it's all about positioning, you know. So the closer you can get, the better off you'll be. But at the same time, you know, a 30-yard shot where your short side are running away from you, you're going to get up and down a lot less than a 60-yard shot from the middle of the fairway, you know, getting up there. And that's, you know, we'll go back into the proximity of the whole thing like you were trying to get into. And this is why trying to get as close as you can, I feel like, is most important. So we reiterated earlier the 75 to 100-yard shot rides, about 17 feet, 17 and a half feet, yeah, somewhere around there on average. That was from the fairway. From the rough, it's 26 feet. 26 feet from the rough, so 9 feet further. So going over to our putting metrics that we had up earlier, a 26-footer, the lowest that I see here. So it's just a little under 10% chance to make a 26-footer as opposed to a 17-footer that you're going to make 1 out of 5. So essentially, yeah, you doubled your chances. You're going to have a essentially double percent chance to get up and down from the rough as you do the fairway, almost, you know, essentially, you right. know, for based off of that, you know. And we go over to the strokes gain metrics that we have here.
So you're going to get up and down twice as often from the fairway as you are from the rough.
Correct. Yeah. From those numbers. Yes. And you'll make more birdie, you know, you'll get up and down. Yes. A lot more. And you're going to have less likely to even blow two strokes as you would a third stroke. And you know, we'll even go into these just a little bit more. Let me find the page I'm trying to get real fast. There it is. Okay, so that we mentioned that 26 feet, right? What distance from the fairway do you think a tour player averages 26 feet from?
26 feet from the fairway.
From the fairway.
I would say, so let's see, 175 to 100, we're at 17 feet. So I'd say 140.
So from what I have, 125 to 150, a tour player averages just a little over 23 feet. Just a little over 23 feet.
Okay.
And from 150 to 175, they average about a little over 27 feet. So from all that, I'd say probably in the range of about 160, probably, yeah, I would say, is about what you're averaging. So off of that number, you would say, oh, man, if I have a chance to hit it in the rough, oh, from one, you know, from 26, but I'm going to hit it, you know, if I get it anywhere inside of 160 in the fairway, I have a chance to hit it closer. Oh, my God, I'm going to hit my lesser club and hit it in the fairway. Well, this is what people don't think about. So you hit that club. You gonna hit that club in the fairway 100% of the time?
No, you're not.
No, you're not. So let's go off of that. So let's say you try to lay back.
Nothing makes me feel like more of a jackass than when I pull out my iron for accuracy and I hook it in the trees.
Yeah, yeah. And then you leave yourself just the worst spot possible, and it's just
now you're 70 yards further back, and you're in the trees.
That's exactly what we're getting at right here. So the proximity of the hole from, you know, we mentioned 160. So the proximity of the hole from 150 to 175 is 42 feet, 42 and a half feet. So now all of a sudden, if you tried to lay back and from the rough from 75 to 100, you would hit it 26 feet. Now all of a sudden, 150 to 175, you're in the rough, you're going to hit it to 42 and a half feet. It's a pretty big difference.
Very big difference. And 42 and a half feet, you're much more likely to three putt than one putt. More likely.
And also, think about this too. You mentioned the miss variance earlier, you know, from 200 to 100 yeah. yard difference. So how much for these higher handicappers, how much is that wide variance going to be from 160 yards in the rough as opposed to 100 yards in the rough?
You know, yeah, I know just me personally, if I've got 100 yards, that's just probably a full 54 or a smooth 50 degree, depending on the wind. And my variance miss on that shot, it's It's not real high. I mean, I'm not hitting it dead straight every time, but I'm not, you know, blasting it off the course. From 180, if I get a little into the wind and I get a 4 or 5 iron in my hand, I mean, I could miss that shot really by 40 or 50 yards either direction if I don't hit it well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, it's a huge difference.
Huge difference. Yeah, exactly. And even you want to go off of, you know, 25-yard difference, you know. So we'll go from, you know, 100 to 25 yards, you know, 100 – At 100 to 125 yards from the fairway, tour players, about 20 feet, just a little under 20 feet. From the rough, they're about 30 and a half feet. And then from, you know, 125 to 150 from the fairway, just a little over 23 feet. And from the rough, you're just a little over 36 feet. So now let's not even talk about what club you, let's just talk about solid contact, okay? So you're playing a hole and you want to hit driver, you're going to bomb it, right? So you bomb and you hit it down there 100 yards in the fairway. 100 yards away or 100 to 125 yards, you'll have essentially a chance. You're going to hit it about 20 feet. You know, that's kind of what it looks like. And let's just say you miss hit it a little bit and you hit it in the rough. You know, you just hit a heeler, the wind got it, or whatever, you know, went in the rough, went 25 yards less, now you're in the rough. So instead of hitting it solid, just hitting, averaging a little less than 20 feet, now from 125 to 150, you're at over 36%, at over 36 feet. And what did we say that the tour average break-even mark on 3-putt was?
It was about 33 feet.
33 feet. So all of a sudden, you went from, we said one in you said 20 feet was 1 in 5 chance. So you went from 1 in 5 chance of making a birdie to now all of a sudden you are at a higher rate of 3-putting than you are at 2-putting.
Yeah, yeah.
All from dinking, all from just mishitting your drive.
Yeah, and that's one thing Tiger said on the Tiger Woods My Game series that his dad always told him when he was younger. You need to swing as hard as you can at the driver while still maintaining your balance and hitting it in the center of the club. Because if you don't hit it in the center of your club, you're going to get yourself into even more problems. And whenever you start creating more problems for yourself with that, then you're going to be in trouble. So you also might be in trouble if you live in Oklahoma in the spring as the hail starts to come down and we get into storm season. It is now May, and you need to have McRae Roofing on your radar. McRae Roofing is a locally owned and operated roofing service company that is passionate about the quality of their roof creations. Jeff McRae, friend of the show, is an owner, the owner of McRae Roofing. He views your roof like a canvas. His team's sole purpose is to create you a masterpiece of a roof, which brings out the beauty of your home and its surroundings, a beauty that will last for years to come. Call McRae Roofing today. Don't wait. 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000, or visit them online at McRaeRoofing.com. All right. As we continue to dive in here, one thing we talk about putting, and we talk about, you know, how close you get it to the hole indicates whether you've got a 20% chance to make that putt, or a 50, or, you know, 3-footer. You got a 95% chance to make a 3-footer, but that also starts to vary, especially as you get further away from the hole, whether you're uphill or downhill. And that's a big thing that, you know, a lot of, especially I think as you start to chip, we were even talking about this the other day. If you're chipping and you're playing too much break on your chips, what's going to happen? If you hit them the right distance, you're going to leave them above the hole, and now all of a sudden, you've got a 5-footer from above the hole as opposed to a 5-footer from underneath the hole, and putting uphill always gives you a better chance to make, and it drastically lessens your chances to 3-putt.
Yes, and the lower the 3-putt is the biggest difference in that, and from what I see. So we talked about the 5-footer, right? The 5-footer was on tour is about 75% chance, normally just a little over. And so on a downhill 5-footer, the tour rank is 75% chance, and the uphill putt is 80% chance. So 5% chance to make it. So over the course of 100 rounds, you're going to make it 5 times more just on the same length of putt, depending on if it's uphill or downhill, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, and that's based off of those numbers were off there based off of the strokes gain metrics. The synopsis that we're talking about earlier from Richie Hunt, he actually broke down the essentially the make percentages from, you know, we talk about the clock system on wedges, but we also talk about the clock system on a green. You know, we want the putt to fall in, you know, 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock, you know, depending on what break it has. And he went through and calculated, you know, what are the percentages on, you know, from, so if you're 12 o'clock, you're putting straight downhill. You know, if you're putting 6 o'clock, you're putting straight uphill. You know, 5 o'clock, you've got uphill right to left, you know, just to give the listeners an image thing. Yeah, so if you're 9 o'clock, you have a directly left to right putt. 3 o'clock, directly right to left putt. And one thing I thought was interesting was that the tour players struggled a lot more on downhill putts that broke, but straight downhill putts, they made actually a considerably amount more than they did uphill straight putts.
That doesn't shock me a ton, because on a straight downhill putt, you don't really have to do much in your stroke. All you have to do is get it started.
And
on a breaking downhill putt, it's hard to pair line and speed perfectly. But if you don't have to really pair your line because it's a dead straight putt, if it's downhill, all you got to do is get rolling.
Yeah, and there's two concepts to that. You know, for we were kind of talking about the other day, you know, you're mentioning yourself, like you don't see straight lines very well, you know.
On my full shots.
On full shots. But, yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of people are the same on putts. They don't see straight lines. You know, they want to see some break in the putt.
Typically, yeah.
And so on uphill putts, you have to hit it harder, like you said. On downhill, you just have to get it started. So uphill straight putts, you know, for some people are really easy. But for some people, they can struggle because, you know, they want to see some break. You know, they can't believe that, oh, man, I can aim this as the center of the hole and hit it.
I'm put it right lip.
Yeah, right lip. And then what do? You hit it right lip or it misses on the right edge of the hole, yeah. and then you blew a stroke.
Either that or it looks dead straight, but there's a little bit of wind. Man, I got this wind off my lip. You know what? We're going to play it left edge.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so you just try to put all these thoughts in your head that aren't there, you know, and you try to see something that's not. So I think that has a little bit to do with it. And also, too, you know, for the tour guys, and for some of us around here that play really good courses, it's the same, but, you know, they're greens are pretty flat, you know, there's, you know, unless there's a lot, you know, late traffic Sunday afternoon, not going to be a whole lot of bumps. So I mean, if you have a 10 footer straight downhill, literally just tap it and it rolls, because it's not going to hit any variance or bumps. You know, even some of the, you know, not elite, but some even the nicer courses around, you know, they'll have some bumps, you know, or a little bit, you know, even in the, you know, if it gets hot, you know, because they don't want the greens to burn up, you know, so there'll be a little bit of fuzziness to them, you know, so there's a little bit more variable there for, you know, maybe the 10 or 12 handicapper compared to the pro, you know, on the downhill. But for the three putt probability, like you mentioned earlier, so we'll take this out a little further. So we mentioned, you know, you'll have a better chance to make the uphills and downhill. And the further you get away from the hole in every putt is where you really lose any probability chance. You know, it's like we mentioned earlier about having, you know, hitting a card on the river when you only have two outs, you know, and it's like, that's not the right thing to do. You know, you're not going to do that very often. And it's the same on, you know, the further you get away from the hole, you know, it's we've all made a 50 footer at one point in our lives. You know, we don't make them how often, you know, we remember those 50 footers we make because we don't do it all the time, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's why we remember them. So, you know, it's about putting the odds in your favor. And so we'll go through down here and where the biggest difference is here is in the medium range putts between uphill and downhill. So we mentioned earlier the 5 footer, there was a 5% difference, 80% to 75%. And you go down at 9 feet is the biggest difference I see here, where on a 9 footer uphill, you have a 48% chance to make it, as opposed to a downhill 9 footer where you're at 41% chance to make it.
Wow.
And so that's 9% on a 9 footer just based on if it's uphill or downhill.
Yeah, same distance putt.
And this for the higher handicappers too, this is where it'll all kind of start to add up. So you get down to the increase is the same until you get down to about 17 feet and out, it starts to level out just because it's out of your control at that point. You know, it's no matter if it's uphill or downhill, you're so far away that the odds of it going in are just slim. You know, that's
yeah,
just,
you're not making it very often.
Yeah, so you're not gonna see a large discrepancy because you're not making a lot uphill as opposed to downhill. But this is where the big difference is. And this is tour players, may I say. So from 20 feet, a tour pro has a 1% chance to an uphill putt has a 1% chance to three putt it from 20 feet. On a downhill putt, they have a 4% chance. So over the course of 100 rounds, over 100 course of 100 putts that are uphill versus downhill, he will three putt three more times on the downhill than the uphill from the same length.
Yeah, and you would think that for the amateur, that number would be even higher because amateurs have much less control over their speed on putts. So you get, I know myself personally, I have an uphill 20 footer. I'm not going to three putt an uphill 20 footer very often because most of the time on an uphill 20 footer, I'm rarely getting that putt 3 feet past the hole. I mean, if I do get that putt past the hole, it's rarely rolling more than a foot past. A lot of times, a guy like me, 5 handicapper, leaves a 20-footer 8 inches short. That's just the reality because you don't want the 3-footer coming downhill and you have to really commit to getting it up the hill. On that downhill putt, you're feeling like, okay, I can roll this one in, and you get just a little aggressive. And a little aggressive on a 20-footer downhill leaves you a 6-footer coming back. That's one you don't want.
And what's our percentage to make on the 6-footer? We got it right here. Downhill
65%.
Downhill 6-footer is 64%. Uphill 6-footer is 69%.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's, and then you opposed to what we talked about earlier, 3 feet, you know, you're 95% chance to make both of them. So yeah,
exactly.
And so, yeah, so 6 feet, that's 30%, 30 shots over the course of 100 rounds.
Yeah, and another thing that, you know, in course management that I need to convince myself to do is you don't always need to make a two on par threes. You know, you think, okay, I get to put my ball on a tee. I'm hitting my approach shot to the green here. Let's hit this thing close. In the reality is, if you were to make a three on every par three you played over the course of a tournament, over the course of whatever you're playing at your home course, your money games, if you're making threes on par threes, you're picking up strokes on the field, whether that's in your local club championship or on the PGA Tour. Make your three on par threes. Don't get overly aggressive and shortside yourself on a 165-yard hole. You know, make your three, move on. You're gaining strokes.
Yes, and so the whenever you see the metrics, you know, like strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained approach, you know, these are the number. A lot of the numbers we're reading off here is what they go off of, you know. So the break-even point on a par three essentially is where the tour player will average three is just a little over 160 yards. So, you know, you would think that, oh, man, you know, we got a birdie if we're inside 160, you know, because, you know, that you're losing strokes. And technically you would be, you know, with the, you know, how many ever may be. But and some of the other, you know, higher handicappers are a little different around, but yet also the strokes gained will be different. But, you know, but how often does a tour pro play 160-yard or shorter par three?
Not very often.
Not very often at all.
And usually when they do, they're incredibly difficult par threes. Yes. Like, think about the famous par threes that are under 160 yards. Seven at Pebble, 12 at Augusta.
Sawgrass.
I mean, we're talking about the toughest par threes in the world. Some of the short ones. World Troon, yep. Yeah.
So I mean, the harder short, I mean, even Marion number 13 there. I mean, it's a flip wedge in there, but yet people still struggle, you know, because the greens are usually smaller and there's trouble around if you miss. So you know, you look at it. So the from 200 yards from the tee, it's 3.12. So over the course of 100 rounds, you know, a tour player will essentially make a bogey. Was that 12 more times than they would?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, that just kind of goes to show, and you'll notice too, on the tour, the what matters the most, you know, like people will think that, you know, that like final round scoring average is what's the most important, you know, or a particular like Saturday's moving day, you know, and all this. But, and it's the same with every single sport, and I don't see why golf is any different. And it's the same, and it's like we talk about off the tee box. The start of what you do is always the most important for your
analytics. It's like a football game. How much more often is the team that scores first going to win the game?
Yeah, or
it's pretty significantly more often.
Yeah, so, you know, we can even, and even if you think it's BS or not, like if you're on the ESPN app, you know, and you're following a football game and it shows that win probability, right? So all of a sudden your team is up 14-0 in the first 7 minutes of the game. What's their win probability?
75%?
Exactly, yeah. And what was it at the start of the game? 50%, even lower if they were an underrated team, right? Yeah, so the start is so important. And that's one of the things that Richie Hunt found in this article that it might have been the most fascinating part of it that I found in this part. So, like we said, we mentioned the start's the most important. So what he did was he went down and he broke down six hole intervals, right? So like 1 through 6 on Thursday, 13 through 18 on Sunday, you know, and everywhere in between.
So he had 9 6-hole intervals. Or, well,
12.
No.
Yeah, 12. Yeah,
12 6-hole intervals.
12 6-hole intervals.
I was thinking right. 9 times 8. I was thinking 8-hole intervals.
Yeah, so, yeah, Matt, yeah, we're doing a lot of number crunching here, so it makes sense.
And it's Monday.
And we don't have any pen or paper. We're just reading off, you know, so it's not like we're doing like we did in high school where we're doing the divide symbol and multiplication. You know, it's not. All the kids now have it lucky. We had to do it hand and paper.
They still do hand and paper?
No, I said the kids now have it lucky.
No, I'm saying, do they still, like, at school, do they still have to write everything out and show the work?
I don't think so. I mean, from the way I see it, they have apps out there where you can just take a picture of your problem and the computer will fix it for you.
Then what's the point of school?
I think what it is I think it's so the kids can learn how to use their resources, maybe.
Probably,
but,
yeah.
But in all honesty, the school is just to charge money, but that's a
use whole your resources, kids.
Yeah, exactly. So a whole different story there, a whole nother rabbit hole, but so, yeah, going back on to, you know, kind of the strokes gain and the pars, and what I found most interesting in that and the whole intervals was that, so for the 12 intervals that we just talked about, right, the most important by far were, so 72-hole tournament, right, most important in yep. 6-hole stretches, the most important were holes 1 through 6, 19 through 20, whatever, 37 through whatever, and then 55 through 61.
So the first 6 holes of every round.
The first 6 holes of every round was the most crucial to tour success out of all the 6-hole stretches by far.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Ain't that crazy?
I wouldn't have guessed that.
You would have think that a lot of times it'd be the final 6 holes or whatever, but literally the most important success is the first 6 holes of every round that you play.
I mean, I guess by that logic, you're just getting off to a good start. It breeds more confidence. It breeds more birdies. It just kind of gets you going, I guess.
And I mean, I know I make this analogy all the time, like if I get off to a bad start or whatever, because Brent Snedeker shot 59 a few years ago, and he was literally one over through three holes when he did it. And so, like, I'll say, oh, Brent Snedeker was one over through three and shot 59. You know, I can do that, you know. But if he was 300 through three, his chances of shooting 59 are a lot better than doing that. You know what I'm saying? So that's an outlier. So,
and yeah, that's like, the exception to the rule.
And it's, we'll go back to the start of it off the tee box, you know, why the start is so important. We looked at the difference there on, you know, your proximity to the hole. If you just dink a drive 25 yards shorter that's in the rough, you know, and we'll look at the actual stroke gained for the tour. So this is broken down into 20 yard intervals. So from the fairway, from 160 yards, the tour player will get up and down a little more often than they won't. So it's 2.98 from 160 yards from the fairway.
Okay.
And from the rough, it is 3.23.
Wow.
Yeah. So that is a fourth. So every four rounds, you're going a stroke higher.
Yeah.
Off of that, just off of missing from the rough and the fairway from the same distance. That is why the start is so, so, so important, because if your start gets you in the fairway longer down there, your odds are so much higher in your favor to score better than they are from the rough, especially if you're shorter.
Well, then tomorrow I'll just really focus on the first six holes and then just put it in cruise control.
Exactly. And that's you do the exact opposite of what every one of our great guests has told us, like Steve Ball, don't think about outcome, and Ryan Gibson, play one hole at a time. So you do the exact
opposite. I'm going to play six holes at a time.
You play six holes at a time.
And I'm going to crush the first six, and then I'm just going to kick back and relax.
So whenever,
once I've crushed the first six, I mean, we're dominating now.
Yeah. So you know what I mean? And that's what your favorite football team, OSU, does a lot of times. They'll get up early, and then they just blow it. So that's probably what they think, too.
I don't understand the reference. Don't understand the reference.
Little bedlam debate here going on, but we'll get back on topic here. So, I mean, and we can even go further down, you know, and One thing, too, that I think I want to definitely share out there that a lot of people get misconception on, you know, it's like, you know, let's say you're playing a long hole, right? Long par four or a par five that you think you can reach into, right? So what do most of us do? Step up there and we're going to swing a little bit harder so we can get the ball down there, correct?
Yeah, let it rip, baby.
Let it rip, because we want
that. High, let it fly.
We want that extra 10 to 15 yards so we have a better chance of getting on the green, right?
Correct? Yeah, better chance of getting on the green, better chance of getting closer, better chance of making birdie.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're thinking, right? So, you know, so you think you can get up there, just bombs away, hit as far as you can. So if you're playing, we'll just make it a par five that you can reach, right? So, you know, we go in here, you know, let's say you hit it in the fairway. And so for 220 yards in the fairway, 3.32. So what is that? You're going to get up and down. You're going to make a four every third round. You know, you'll get up and down a little bit in there, that kind of thing. So from there, 220, or what I'm saying is you won't bogey from there is more or less the case. And then, but from the rough, it's 3.53. So one out of every five rounds now, you are losing a stroke because you didn't hit it in the fairway. You know, and so, you know, that's just, and even, so even if you want those extra yards and you hit it in the rough, so from, let's see. So from right here, if you're 200 yards out from the fairway, you're 3.19. But if you hit in the fairway from the rough at 180, so you caught it a little bit better. You're 20 yards closer, but you're still in the rough. You're at 3.31. So over the course of 10 rounds, you're losing essentially a stroke.
Right.
And you tried to, you know, hit it further, you know. So, but if you did catch that one in the fairway, you got down to 180.
The thing is, if somebody's listening, they're like, okay, every 10 rounds I'm losing a stroke. I play recreationally. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is not the one stroke you're losing in that particular one aspect. The big deal is that if you're making all of these mistakes in all these rounds that you play, so now every 10 rounds you're losing a stroke here, a stroke there, a stroke here, a stroke here, and you're losing 10 strokes over 10 rounds. If you're playing money games with your buddies, More money's going from your wallet to their wallet than vice versa because you're making silly mistakes.
Well, and we talk about this. You're saying you're losing a stroke around, but we're talking about losing a stroke around because of one shot. That's what we're talking about. A tee shot is caught, you know, will cost you those strokes over those rounds because, like we mentioned, you know, either you're trying to hit it too hard or, while we emphasize, target lines are so important.
And what if you hit seven of those tee shots in a round? You don't have a good day off the tee that day. You hit seven of those tee shots in a round, and even if you offset the numbers, you get it up and down a couple times. You lose five strokes in that round.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, five strokes for me is the difference between 75 and 80. That's the difference in making and losing money that day at the golf course.
Exactly. I mean, it's all there is to it. And, you know, getting into, you know, the reason we like to talk about this stuff, because these are things that you can you can control this because you know these things, you know. You need to work on what you can control in golf, you know. You can't control, you know, if your ball hits a tree and bounces out of bounds, you know. You can't control if...
I always try to aim for the side of the tree that kicks it toward the fairway. That's another tip I would give people.
Does it work out well for you?
No, not usually.
It normally hits it and goes out of bounds or... you could just try aiming at the fairway. That might be a good idea.
You know, you'd think you'd have a 50-50 chance when you hit a tree to get it to kick somewhere good. It rarely does.
You know, one of my old friends when I was younger, he told me a phrase, and I still don't understand to this day. He told me, trees are 98% air. So just aim right through it. And I guess maybe, you know, organically maybe, because, you know, it's a living organism, so it's air. So I guess maybe that's what he meant. But anytime I tried to hit through trees, I mean, the branch could be a centimeter wide or it could be the biggest thing ever, and it's gonna find its way to hit something. So whatever.
I got one friend. His name's Preston. Shout out Preston, who gets through more trees than anyone I've ever played golf with in my life. I mean, the dude just sends missiles right through trees, goes right through the middle of them, doesn't hit anything, and comes out on the other side. And it is infuriating when you're playing against him. I mean, he'll do it 3-4 times a round. He'll send it through the trees, and I'm like, how are you doing this?
Well, that's what I was about to ask. If he, you know, is he having a lot of opportunities to hit it through the trees? If he's doing it 3 or 4 times around, let's get your friend driver fitted.
Yeah, maybe get a little higher fairway percentage.
Yeah, we need a little higher fairway percentage. Yeah, because like we just showed, he's losing strokes, you know.
Yeah,
and also too, you know, we had broken down, you know, just hitting it in the rough too, and fairway bunkers are a lot more penalizing strokes wise than just rough.
Yes.
You know, so if.
Especially for the amateur player. So, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So we talked about, you know.
Amateur players have no idea how to hit fairway bunker shots.
Okay. So, yeah, this will just break it down for you. So from 200 yards out, long shot, obviously. We mentioned 3.19 from the fairway, 3.42 from the rough, and now you're looking at 3.55 from the sand.
Yes.
You know, and so.
And for an amateur player, I'm telling you, that discrepancy will be even bigger because amateur players just have no idea how to hit fairway bunker shots.
Yeah,
it's a hard shot to hit.
It's a horrible hard shot, and you have to teach it. It's a different mechanic. A lot of people don't get a grasp on it, you know. But I think the biggest difference is just avoid them, you know.
Yeah.
Like we mentioned in our last one, you know, about working on your bunker shots, you know, and trying to, you know, have the confidence and do that. Well, it's not the same with fairway bunkers. You don't say, oh, well, I'm a really good fairway bunker player, so I can aim at that one, you know, because, you know, it's just because it eliminates like you said, you're losing so many strokes when you do it, you know, and it's like as opposed to a greenside bunker where you have a lot, you know, if you have good technique and, you know, you have the equipment, such a big part in all this too, you know, and it's, you know, we like to try to keep these episodes, you know, slightly condensed so we don't bore the listeners too much. But I mean, there's just so much great stuff that we can get into on this line.
Yeah, and we're both very analytical, so we like talking about this stuff. One other thing I want to get to before we get out of here is playing in weather. We get a lot of that in Oklahoma, mostly wind. You know, wind, sometimes you end up playing in rain. But I know I went out, what day was that? Friday. The wife and I went out. We went out to the greens here in Oklahoma City, and the wind was blowing, I mean, a steady 25 with gusts in the 30s. And it is so much more difficult to pick your lines, to play in that kind of weather. And it ate me up a little bit because I had not played in that strong of a wind in a while. You know, we're used to playing in a 15-mile-an-hour wind. That's just standard everyday stuff. But when you're standing over a shot from 160 yards and the wind's blowing 34 in your face because you just caught a big gust, that's a hard shot to play.
Well, and also, too, it goes back to, I mean, you got to have the right mental process to be able to get through. You know, whenever you're out there in those conditions that are just flustering and, you know, you don't necessarily know – when you don't have the confidence, you know, then you're not, you know, we mentioned how many other times, if you don't have confidence, don't do it. You know, like
don't trust that the ball is going to go where you want it to on that swing, you might need to rethink.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you need to rethink. Yeah.
Or if there's no way for you to get confidence on that shot, you need to spend more time on the range.
Correct.
And get a little bit
better. Do the best you can. Yeah. So, you know, we talked about hitting driver. Well, like I said, if you don't feel confident with your driver, you want to be with Colby, have his 2-iron hit it down there. And that's another thing that we get into about, you need to develop a go-to shot, but we'll save that for another day. We'll go to, you know, the strategy, you know, how we talked about wind, you know, temperature and all that. So, you know, according to some of the things around, so what I've done is I went and looked at TrackMan numbers, you know, because they're obviously the most analytical that you'll find, so they kind of have the good things. There's a real famous clip that went out Phil Mickelson was on the Faraday show, and he talked for about 3 minutes about all these different things that he thinks about his thought process and all that. And so I'll just go off some of the...
It's a great episode.
One of the best out there. And so I'll go off some of the things that I've typed up based off of the TrackMan, that and some of my other research that I found. Depending on the temperature has, you know, we around here, we tend to have that it has the actual temperature only has a little bit of effect on your ball. It's only about 1 yard per every 10 degrees. What that doesn't take in consideration is like when we're playing, when it's cold, you're wearing bulkier clothes, you know, your muscles
aren't
as...
Your swing speeds are slower.
So that's the reason why a lot of times when it's cold, people say, oh, you know, take, like me and my dad, we always say take off 10%. It's not necessarily just because of the weather making the ball go shorter. It's the exterior factors, the extra clothes, muscles not being as loose.
Usually for me in the winter, I just say, ah, go up a club.
Yeah, yeah. It just, and it's a good knowledge to have, you know, but it's not actually the cold that does it. The reason the cold air does it is it makes the ball goes higher and spins more when it does. So if you are playing in cold, you might be able to get a little bit more spin, a little bit higher ball flight than you usually need to. When it's hot, the ball just kind of soars through the air, not much spin. That's why 2007, when they had the PGA here, you know, Tiger, he didn't do as much as he did at Hoylake, but he was bunting irons all around the place just because he's just bombing it out there, you know. And so, and, you know, we reiterated this, you know, about with Tiger, about watching the wind, you know, just look at every single aspect you can. You know what, one thing, and I went back and listened to it, I don't think I relayed the message as correctly as it should have. You know, it's like, obviously you look at every surrounding, but you know, if you're on a par three and it's 200 yards, you know, that 200 yards of difference there, the wind could be doing something entirely different 200 yards in front of you than it is where you're at now. And so that's why looking at that stuff is so observant, because I mean, it's nature. Nature's a weird phenomenon, you know? So, I mean, it can be doing anything. So the more things that you can observe, the better, while not overloading yourself, you know, because this is where like we're breaking down this, I mean, every time, you know, self-analysis and knowing what is right for your game. You know, if you're the type where you play better where you just step up and you hit it and go for it, then, you know, I'd advise, you know, maybe get a game plan before the round starts and then go from there. You know, if you're the type that, you know, like we talk about all these different things and your mind can get overwhelmed because it's like, oh my God, I'm thinking about too many different things, and all of a sudden you chunk it, you know, because you're thinking about, you know, is this right? You know, so then you question yourself. So, you know, use the information to your knowledge. You know, it's like, you know, you can read any book you want out there, any fake news that's on the internet. It's a matter of if you believe it or you take it or not. You know, it's like, just because it's out there doesn't mean it's true or beneficial, or, you know, beneficial to yourself even. You know,
that's what we talked about with Steve. A lot of the stuff, you know, you see a lot of stuff on Golf Channel, and there's a lot of, you know, hot teacher of the month type guys. And, you know, some of the stuff they say is good, and some of the stuff they say, you might think, man, I just don't really know about that. I don't know if that's applicable for me. I might stay away from that.
Yeah, and not only, well, I'll finish up the distance stuff and just say, but also going back to that, not only may it not be good for any game, anyone, but a lot of times what you'll see is it's a drill for someone that has a problem doing something. You know, it's like,
right.
And so what a lot of players, they can't grasp the fact of, they see that this drill is good. You know, let's say, for example, they see a drill to fix their slice or whatever, you know, and, you know, generally a 8 handicapper has, like, normally it's a common slice, but there are different ways that you can slice the ball. So let's say he sees something to cure a slice, and all of a sudden he tries it, and it might make his swing worse. You know, he might see it, and because it's not the drill that's right for him and what he needs. So that's just where the self-awareness and knowledge comes into it. Going back to the distance stuff, you know, so we've already mentioned temperature and the wind, obviously, and throw this in with the wind. You know, a north wind around here, because it's colder, it's thicker, will have more impact than, especially into the wind, than a south wind will.
Yep.
You know, so, and also too, when you're downwind, what will happen a lot of times is the ball won't create spin, so it won't go up in the air. So it will just essentially nosedive on you. So while a lot of times you may hit it further, we mentioned that carry distance a lot earlier, you know, your carry distance will be different compared to, you know, how far. I mean, it may be different with the wedge or a 9-iron because it's literally a jet stream, and the higher you hit it, it could just soar on you, you know. But normally with any type of longer club or anything like that, or even if it doesn't get in the right jet stream, it's just going to be knocked down, and it may even carry shorter sometimes, you know, just because of that's the way the wind's going. Then there's, you know, other things, elevation, you know, notice if it's uphill, downhill is very important. And then, you know, you can kind of judge, you know, is that a club or is that half a club? You know, that's a feel thing for yourself. And then I know they make those range finders. I've actually never used one where it like calculates the slope for you, you know, where it's like,
yeah, I've never used one. I know a couple guys who have them. I don't know how
I don't know how accurate it would be, you know. Yeah, for me it's all feel, you know. It's like I see how far uphill it is, so I add how many ever yards, you know. So whatever works for you. You know, around here we don't worry too much about altitude. If you're traveling to
Colorado, Mexico City, anywhere around there, or traveling to California, Florida, where you're a little closer to sea level, you know, your ball will go shorter, you know. So,
well, and you can even look that up. Like, if you're going to Colorado and you're going to be playing at 8,000 feet, you can get online and you can find a calculator for, okay, how much further is my golf ball going to fly at 8,000 feet? And it'll tell you, okay, it's going to fly 13% further. And you can get an idea, okay, if I've got a 113-yard shot, it's going to play about my 100-yard shot at home. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that.
Yeah. And so,
because that's what they do at Chapultepec in Mexico. All those guys, you see it constantly on the broadcast. Actual yardage, 178. Plays like 159 or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And it gets those up there for you. And the caddies have them all in their book. So they've got that all calculated. So they know how far to hit it when they get out there.
And that's a very good point that you mentioned that, because, you know, like for us, you know, a lot of players will say, I hit my 7-iron 170 yards or whatever, you know. And it's like, well, look at all these factors that we just listed to you. You know, are you playing in the morning or are you playing in the afternoon? Your 7-iron is going to go a different yardage at that time. You know, what is the wind doing? You know, is it, you know, obviously downwind, crosswind, into the wind, the ball will go different. You know, are you hitting a little uphill? Are you hitting a little downhill? You know, another thing that's really important that a lot of people don't take into consideration is the lie. You know, is your ball sitting good in the fairway? Is it sitting average in the fairway? Is it sitting in a divot? Is it in a little bit of a hole that you have to trap, you know, hit more down on it? Because whenever you can't get any cushion under the ball will obviously carry shorter because it just doesn't have the time to get up and you can't make a solid contact normally as you normally would, you know, because it's, I mean, it's just like anything. If the ball's in a hole, you know, you can't compress it the way that it needs to be because there's friction there in your way, you know? And so as compared to, like Phil said, you know, if you're off of a tee or off Zoysia, where you can catch it higher on the face, you know, and, you know, get through
let the ball. Let it fly, baby.
It's going to go, you know, probably
about
5 yards further. Yeah. And so there's other things to look at. You know, another thing that's a little important around here, not as much as in Florida where there's a lot of grain. You know, if you have an into the grain chip, obviously we've talked about how the club will stick, but also a lot of times too, because the club sticks, the ball will come out shorter, but it'll also rise up the face, so it kind of spins more.
Right.
So these are things that Phil mentioned in the thing. And if it's down grain, it's a lot easier because it's like we mentioned, there's no friction, so the club just kind of glides through it, you know. So just little things to look at. Like I said, the grain's not necessarily something to worry about so much in Oklahoma. A few courses and instances it may be. Now Bermuda greens around here, grain I feel is important on some of them, but around
we're getting more courses with Bermuda around here. More places are starting to put them in, but you know, I play on Bermuda and I have not noticed myself reading the grain too often.
It's not as potent as it is in South Texas or Florida. You know, it's just because it grows differently, and I think it's a different type of Bermuda as well. I'm not a grass knowledge person or whatever they say. I just go off of, I know I like Zoysia and I like green grass. You know, so that's kind of what I go off.
Yeah, Zoysia's always fun to play.
Oh my God, it's like cheating almost, you know. And you know, like I said, we've broken down a lot of stuff here today. Like I said, we could go even more. We may even do a second part or going off some of the things that we haven't got to, just because there's so many things that can improve not only everyone's game, but, you know, there's so many different areas, you know, depending on your skill level that you can attack, that you can make better. You know, it's like, it's a starting ground, but the starting ground is your own self-awareness. You know, it's like we talk about all these different things, you know, and, you know, break even numbers if you hit the fairway, you know, but, you know, do what you're confident in, you know, like I brought up you know, if you have a day where you're just hitting that 2-iron so solid and you're hitting your driver like shit, hit that 2-iron every time. You know, if you're playing, you know, don't tell yourself, I'm going to hit the 2-iron every round for the next 5 years. You know, that's not what you want to do. But if you're in the course of the round, do what you can to get that score lower.
And what you feel comfortable and confident with.
Confident with,
like Steve Ball said, it's all about confidence. You got to be confident.
And, you know, and we brought that up too with the, you know, just knowing exactly what you need to do and, you know, knowing your carry distance and all that stuff. And it, like I said, there's a lot more to get into. And, you know, hopefully everyone gets their game a little bit better from what we said here today.
Absolutely. Everybody go play some golf, have some fun. We're going to do a Dustin Johnson player profile later in the week. So looking forward to that. And now, as we're coming up on this match between Rory, DJ, Ricky, and Matt Wolf, we will have player profiles out for Ricky and DJ after the one coming up later this week. So looking forward to that. We'll get into everything throughout his storied career. Remember to follow us online, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Search 73rd Hole and take 2 minutes, rate, and subscribe to this podcast wherever you are listening. We appreciate everyone joining us for another edition of the 73rd Hole.